Okay, today we finally get to do the Mesher Chachma on the Chukotai, which I've been waiting to do forever. As I send out my emails, you know, dying to do this Mesher Chachma. I've been waiting for weeks and weeks and weeks, actually. Because somebody turned me on to it and brought my attention to it. And it's very, very long. So I don't know if we'll get through all of it. Hopefully we'll get through a good chunk of it. Take your sheets as you want. You don't have to follow along, but if you want to, you're certainly welcome to. I'll just start by way of introduction. As we all know, the Chukotai has in it the Tochacha. Tochacha, the rebuke, right, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to Klal Yisrael through Moshe Rabbeinu, telling them, if you follow the Torah, if you follow the Mitzvot, hi, welcome back. If you follow the Torah and Mitzvot, terrific. If you don't, terrible, terrible, terrible things will happen to you. And as we all know, like, you know, Jewish history has sort of kind of borne out that that's pretty much what happened. They didn't all print, but that's okay. We're not going to read through the Tochacha, but if you look at the end of the Tochacha, Perek Chaf Vav, Pasuk Mem Dalid, okay, Perek Chaf Vav, Pasuk Mem Dalid. Says the Torah, okay, that after all these things, the terrible things are going to happen to you. Actually, let's go back to Mem Bet 42, 26:42. V'zacharti et briti Yaakov. I'll remember my covenant of Yaakov. V'afet briti Yitzchak. V'afet briti Avraham eskor. V'aretz eskor. And I'll remember briti Yitzchak. And I'll remember my covenant of Yitzchak and Abraham. And I'll remember the land. Just to point out, we're not going to talk about it. Just what do you notice that's interesting about this? About this pasuk, there's a few things that are interesting about this pasuk. Exactly. Hey, it's backwards. It's backwards. Okay. I'll remember. Why does it go backwards? I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to answer that. Just good eye. Mem gimel. Ve'haaretz te'azev mehem, and the land will abandon them. Ve'tiretz et shabatotah, and she will answer for or you know get back her shabatot, her rest. Remember last week we talked about the significance of shemitah. Ve'hashama mehem, when she is desolate from them. They will also, liratzot means to appease their sins. Yan ubiyan bimishpatai ma'asu. Ve'edchukotai ga'ala nafsham. Because they have been, dimos means ma'as, disgusted by my covenants, my statutes, and their souls were repulsed by my chukot. Mem dale. Ve'am gamzot. But despite all this, Biyotam be'eretz oyveihem, when they're in the land of their enemies, lo me'astim ve'lo ge'altim l'chalotam, I have not been ma'os, been repulsed, li'ge'ol, ge'ol nefesh, go'el nefesh, revolted to such a degree, l'chalotam, to destroy them, l'hafer briti itam, to destroy my covenant with them, ki ani Hashem Elokeichem. So even though all these terrible things will happen, and I have rejected them, you've rejected me, we hate each other, we can't stand each other, we can't stand the sight of each other, I sent them away, the land can't stand you, you're all in exile, terrible things have happened for you, I will not destroy you. Nonetheless, there's still a covenant, there's still a concept of brit, there's still a covenant concept of connecting to Klal Yisrael. There's only one problem, and it's a huge, huge, huge ideological, fundamental problem, and that is, I just give by way of example. So we just celebrated Yom HaAtzmaut. Those of you who are from America, which is like two of you, how do we celebrate in America? How do we celebrate July 4th?
Barbecues and fireworks.
Barbecues, that's exactly it. Barbecues and fireworks. Very good. So imagine, God forbid, the People's Republic of China. What's that?
That's
open. It is open. Oh, you want to open the back door? It'll help with the breeze. Somebody else can't get through. The People's Republic of China, right, attacks. Conquers the United States and exiles all people from the United States of America to, I don't know, Japan, Bangladesh, wherever. They scatter them to the four corners of the earth so that the people of America are now living in exile. So the first July 4th, what are they going to do?
Have barbecues and fireworks.
Why?
Because they're remembering.
That's exactly right. In order to remember the life as it once was, July 4th now becomes a sort of mournful barbecues and fireworks as opposed to a celebratory barbecues and fireworks. Right?
What about Yom
HaAtzmaut
in
Chutz La'aretz? Hold on. We'll talk about that in a second. Yom HaAtzmaut in Chutz La'aretz is a celebration of an existing holiday. Okay? But they would remember 10 years down the road, how would the barbecue be?
Smaller.
20 years down the road. Right. Exactly right. Why? Because the kids would say, The kids would say, Mom, Dad, what are we doing this for? This July 4th doesn't mean anything. We celebrate, you know, whatever it is. The Chinese holiday of the dragon fire or whatever it is they celebrate. Why? Because their children would say, we are members of the People's Republic of China. We were born in China. We belong in China. All these ancient ways of yours are very nice. But, you know, let's move on. That's the natural way of things. How is it then? I mean, does anybody disagree with my little my scenario? It makes sense. That's logical. Yeah. How?
The timeline's off, though. It'd be longer.
More than 20 years?
Yeah.
I disagree. It'd be 7 years.
No, but look at all the people who still have Thanksgiving, even though they've been living here for decades.
No. America is still here. They're still Americans. Liz, can you throw me a tissue?
That's what I'm saying. Like, while we might do Thanksgiving, our children are not going to do anything for Thanksgiving.
How many people got a Mother's Day card?
16th of June.
Mother's Day
was right. Do they have Mother's Day where you're from? They do
yeah.
that? You got a Mother's Day card here? Nothing.
But we
used to do it in Miami. I think my wife went through a little bit of withdrawal because in her family it was like a big deal. You got this card like the size of, you know, Montana. Right, the whole thing. My family, we never did it. We always tell the party line. Every day in our family is Mother's Day. Yes,
yeah,
every day.
Exactly.
Anyway.
We also say that every day is Thanksgiving, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't... Anyway, these are all excellent examples. It's much less than 20 years. How then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the Jewish people are going to be scattered to the corners of the earth, sent out of their land, abandoned, neglected, suffer. And nonetheless, oh, by the way, 10 years down the road, 50 years down the road, 100 years down the road, I'll remember you, I won't destroy you completely, and I'll want you to come back. That's very nice. But, who's to say there's going to be what left to come back to? How do you destroy a people and exile them from their land and still maintain the possibility that they'll still remain a people?
Well, that's what differentiates us. We're not just physical bodies, we're both the body and the neshama.
Yeah.
So the neshama stays connected, has that yearning even when the body...
You're saying it's inherent, it's natural, there's nothing God can do.
It's unexplainable.
Because it's a way of life. Our religion is a way of life, it's not just where we are.
No, but there's even those that are not religious are still connected to Islam.
So. Today in Israel is not... Today in Israel is not a comparable example. Because Israel exists and is strong. And it is the center of Jewish life today.
80 years ago when there wasn't Israel.
80 years ago when there wasn't Israel. 100 years ago when there wasn't Israel. How? That's how. Who had a yearning? How?
Everyone yearned for Israel.
Probably more than they do today, ironically.
Exactly. Yeah.
So this is the subject. This is the subject of the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma wonders about this question, and he goes in a relatively long essay, which you have to read all of because it's critically important to read all of it. Okay. Meshech Chachma. Who wrote the Meshech Chachma? Can you look up Meshech Chachma on Wikipedia? I don't have time to do it. You have it on your iPhone. Okay? You'll tell us, because it's important to know exactly when he lived. You'll see in a second exactly when and where. Rabbi Meir Simcha HaKohen of...
She told you.
No, keep going. Look it up. I need to know exactly when he lived. Of Dvinsk. Okay? Rabbi Meir Simcha HaKohen of Dvinsk. Dvinsk was in... Just look up Meshech Chachma. 1 second. Yeah. Meir Simcha HaKohen of Dvinsk. You'll look it up on Wikipedia. You'll get it right away. What? No,
totally
no, that's Ramchal. That's Rabbi Moshe Chaim Dutzato. Okay? Meshech Chachma, his biography is important. I didn't have time to look it up. Okay. So let's look inside. You'll see on your sheets, I squished it all in. Okay, as you'll see, because whatever, it's trying to save paper. And you could follow along inside if you have it. I'm on number, I'm at the top, obviously. Hainyanhu. We'll read it together inside. Page one, whatever, you can figure it out. Hainyanhu. We have to try to understand part of the ways of the Hashgacha Elyona, the exalted Hashgacha, divine influence, what we can understand. This is, when the exalted wisdom decreed, Asher Yisrael yitnodidu be'ame arzot, that the Jewish people yitnodid, Navanad. You got it?
Yeah.
What'd you got?
He lived from 1843 to 1926.
1843 to 1926.
World War I.
Through World War I. More importantly for the Jewish world, the World War I is obviously very significant. What was happening to Jews in the Jewish world from pretty much 1843 to 1926? Nah, much less. Pogroms are much worse in what? Minimal. Dreyfus, there was very minimally. But what was happening to the Jewish people? Very good. In Dvinsk, Lithuania, across Eastern Europe especially, across Western Europe, it happened even beforehand. The Haskalah. And of course, what goes along with the Haskalah?
Secularization
and assimilation. Very good. That's exactly right.
It says here that political ideas were decidedly anti-Zionist, although he had been reported as welcoming the Balfour Declaration.
Uh-huh. Really? Okay. Well, very good. We'll see. But he was definitely anti-Haskalah, as we'll soon see. Okay? So, I mean, as you're watching the Jews in the lands abandon wholesale their people, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, oh, I'll call you back after, but Mashiach Chachma is looking around and saying, there's not going to be much to call back. Sorry, I should beat you. What can you do? Okay. You got to work on that, whatever. Okay. You'd know the do me artsot shanim rabot ma'od ma'od. You'd know the do from the word navanad. They will scatter. They will wander. Many, many years. Adzman asher chakaka ha-matara ha-elokit. Until the time which is chakaka, hewn, the goal, the exalted goal. What is the exalted goal? The time? Until that time, that Mashiach comes. Asher liba lepuma lo galya. It's very poetic, actually. Liba lepuma lo galya. That which is in the heart was not revealed to the mouth. That's what God said to Yaakov when Yaakov Avinu wanted to know when Mashiach would come. Liba lepuma lo galya. I can't tell you. Chashva ufanim v'tachbulot asher Yisrael yitkaimu legoy v'lo yitbalalu v'amim. So God thought of ways, tachbulot, that's a tachbula, like tricks, in order to make sure that the Jewish people don't assimilate into the nations. What's that? We'll get there. We'll get there. Gedol ha'uma. The first person, the greater of the nation, had this idea, la'asod v'zeh gidarim siyagim, to make fences and a siyag. Siyag is also another word for a fence. Anybody know where that word appears? Siyag? It appears in Pirkei Avot, Asu Siyag La Torah, the first mission in Pirkei Avot. Asher ha'uma titkayem, that the nation should continue to exist, b'sha'on galei hayam, in the turmoil of the waves of the sea. V'lo titba, right on number two, I think, right? V'lo titba, and it will not drown, b'misulot hasar hashotef, in the great waves of the sar, is the storm that will wash over them, beruach amitz v'kabir, with these great terrible winds. So obviously, like the exile is like a terrible sea, and the winds are turning them up and down, and they want to drown us. The first one who showed the way, melamed roshei ha'uma, who taught the heads of the nations, who avinu zaken Yaakov. It is Yaakov avinu. He saw that which would happen to us in the end of days. What happens if his 70 children and grandchildren, they go down to Egypt? What's going to happen to them? And 70 Jews among millions of Egyptians. They will assimilate. They will just, you know, one in 10,000, 10 million. Literally, one in 10 million. How many Jews? 70 Jews. How are 70 Jews going to survive as a nation? Chashav tachbula ve'etza. So he thought of a trick, an idea. Asher banav yihyu mitzuyanim sham bibigdehem u'bishmotam. What is the word? Would anybody recognize the word mitzuyanim sham? Where did we find that word about the Jews in Egypt? Anybody recognize that language? Mitsuyanim? Mitsuyanim doesn't mean excellent. No. It means outstanding. Yeah. Outstanding in the literal sense of the word. They stood out. Yeah. Mitsuyanim sham. We have that language in the Haggadah Shel Pesach. Meaning, what did Yaakov say? He says Yaakov had the idea. It wasn't that What do we know about the uniqueness of the Jewish people in Egypt? What was the only thing different about them? Names, Lashonam, language, and Malbusham, their clothes. You think that was by coincidence? Yaakov Avinu, when he went down to Egypt, he said, I want you to remember something. You're going to forget everything else. I want you to speak Yiddish. I want you to keep your Jewish names. It's not Stephen or Billy. I want you to be Yisrael Moshe or Yaakov or Adiel or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? Right? And I want you to dress like a Jewish person. And they did. He says that was Yaakov. It wasn't the Egyptians forced them. That was what the Jewish people decided to do. Why did they decide to do that? They just stopped decided? Yaakov decided. You think about it. How else would you distinguish? Would you, like, what does he have? There's no Torah. He did something else, actually. What else did he do? He did something quite interesting. Yosef did something very important. What did Yosef do? That's right. He made them live separately. And in fact, when Paro, if you recall, we've studied this before, when they come down to Egypt and Paro says, oh, you got brothers? What can they do for us? Can they lead the army? What does Yosef say?
No,
they're terrible. They're bad at everything. They just can't do it. The only thing they know how to do is raise sheep. Other than that, nothing.
Yosef himself was very, I don't want to say assimilated, but he had a different name.
Zafna Paneach, and he dressed like an Egyptian. He had to. He was the king.
So much so that the brothers didn't even recognize him.
What do we call Yosef?
Assimilated?
No. What was Yosef? Yosef's title? Yosef?
Tsar.
What do we call Yosef? Yosef?
Hatzadik.
Why is he a tzadik? According to many opinions, he's a tzadik because he stayed Yosef even amongst that. Something that most people would not be able to do. We think a tzaddik is a person who is a pious all day long, who studies, says Tehillim with a long beard. That's not a tzaddik. A tzaddik is a person who goes out into the world and maintains his identity despite all the pressures that he faces. That's a tzaddik. A different picture of what a tzaddik is. Okay. V'lachen, hayu Yisrael legoi b'fnei atzmo. They were a nation among themselves. V'im haya Yaakov avi kol shivtei Yisrael kavur sham. And one other thing he says, if he was buried there, halo hayu mityashim me'eretz Kanaan, v'hayu mishtakim b'mitzrayim, they would have abandoned Canaan, they would have stayed in Egypt, settled there permanently. U'machshivim otal le'eretz moladitam, they would have considered it their birthplace. V'haya batel yi'ud ha'elohiki aleihem, the designation, the spiritual designation, would have been negated. Kilo yazera Avraham, rak chelek echad me'am Mitzrayim. They would not be Zera Avraham, they would just be a piece of Mitzrayim. Lachen, tziva bechol oz. If you recall, in the beginning of Parshat Vayichi, he sits up on the bed, he makes Yosef swear, he makes him swear again, he begs him, he pleads with him, don't bury me in Egypt. Because he understood, right? Therefore, v'yedun, they would know ki avota uma v'yichusahu eretz Kanaan. They would know that their place is in eretz Kanaan. I'm skipping the parentheses. U'bazen nikba b'nefesh banav ki shur tivi, and in this was established in the souls of their children a natural connection. Nishtokek el eretz avotehem, to yearn for the land of their fathers. V'lachshov atzmam kegerim. It is so interesting. I actually told the story last night. I was called suddenly to give a shiur, like on 10 minutes notice. So I decided to give this, and I told the story. But when I first got to my first shteller in West Hartford, Connecticut, so there's a young Israel there, and I was the rabbi of the Agudas Achim. The Agudas Achim is the shul that was the big shul 50 years ago. And if you know anything about American Jewry 50 years ago in suburban America, right, it was traditional, and the vast majority of the people were not religious. So the rabbi did what he could. NCSY was extremely strong there. But most of the people who were traditionally stayed traditional. What were their children? Usually either conservative or reform. And their grandchildren?
Religion.
Well, halabai. Either religious? Usually not. Some were religious, vast majority are not. Okay, so I got there my first whatever. You know, on a normal Shabbat, we dive in downstairs in the chapel. You know, with the 50, 60 people that would show up. On high holidays, we went up to the main sanctuary. Those are the chagim, were the only times. And it was pretty sparse, except Rosh Hashanah, a little bit better, Yom Kippur, packed. And I'm like, yeah, okay, everything's great, you know. You know, everything's wonderful. We're dominating the Torah reading, the rabbi's sermon. I can't say it was that good. It was just starting out. Then we say Yizkor. Anybody been in, I don't know what it's like in Yizkor in South Africa, but it was like a show. It was a production. You know what I'm saying? We made a booklet. And you had to pay to get the name of your loved one in the Yizkor booklet for this year. And people paid. You know, I mean, that was a big money raiser, fundraiser.
The carrots finished in 5 minutes.
5 seconds.
It would be outside like half an hour.
That's right. That's right. Every Yizkor board, the Chazan went specifically to the Yizkor board and said a Yizkor for the people on that board. You know what I'm saying? There was a scroll with the names of the rabbis and the president, and he read out the names of the rabbis and the president from a klaf on Yizkor. It was like, it was a big deal. You know? And then Yizkor's over, and of course, what, like, I grew up in a, you know, in a young Israel, and as soon as Yizkor's over, all the people come back in, and Musa starts, and it's like serious. What happens in the Agudas Achim?
Everybody left.
Oh my God! It was like Kriyas Yamsuf. It was unbelievable. And I'm sitting there, literally like shell shocked. What is happening to my shul? You know what I'm saying? And in the end, who's left?
The ones that were there.
The same 50, 60 people that are there Shabbos morning. And it was just such an eye opener for me, and it came to realize they're not coming for tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah. They're coming for Bubby and Zadie. They're coming for Mom and Dad. They're coming to say Yizkor. And this draw that our ancestors have on us, and this idea of kavod, it's still inherent. People still want to remember. They still want to honor. That's a good thing. Yaakov Avinu knew this. He played on it. You know, even I will say personally, I don't know how much of it is connected, but my father, when he died, I was very, very young, and he was buried in, he's buried in Beit Shemesh. And I have a sense of connection to this place, without a doubt. Because if you want to go visit your parents' grave, you have to come to Israel. You know, and I always say, like, I used to speak about it. I said, you know, we live in America. Even if you didn't do it, when you die, you should be buried in Israel. For a lot of reasons. I've spoken about it before here. But one of them is, you want your children to have a connection to, what do you want? Do you want them to be connected to, you know, to Livonia, Michigan? To wherever it is in New Jersey where they bury them? Or to Eretz Israel? And let's be honest, in 200 years, do you really think they're going to be visiting you in Livonia, Michigan? You know, to be brutally honest. Anyway, Yaakov understood that. And that's why he insisted and understood that if he was buried in Egypt, that would be the end. Yeah?
Why do people want to be buried next to their loved ones?
Well, there's an idea of kever avot. There's absolutely a strong idea of being buried in a family plot.
Well,
being family together.
It's just skin and bones. It's not.
I don't agree. That's not true. That's not true. No, no, no. Gvura is a sacred idea. It's a very sacred idea. Yeah. If it was just skin and bones, then we would, you know, we wouldn't really care.
No, that's what they say. You have to be careful where you're buried. Like, not some.
Burial is a great city. We've spoken about this, haven't we? About being buried and about Gilgal Atzamot. You don't remember? About being buried? Oh, I'm sure. I'll tell you another time. Go look back. Right. Where's our story?
I know the rolling thing.
Yeah, that I've spoken about, but it's without a doubt true that according to Chazal, the idea of being buried is a permanent resting place before Tchiyat HaMetim, that there's a connection to the place in which you are.
There are specific stories about these rabbis that had a dream and that they were buried next to this. No, but like, so there is.
We don't mess around. Yeah, there is a significance. Just look at. You know, the significance we have to Chevron, to Kever Avot, to Marad HaMachpelah, you know, it's significant. We don't pray.
You were so special. You
all know, right. I just give you a halachic example. It is prohibited. We've been through this. It has been, you and I, it's prohibited to exhume a body to rebury somewhere else, other than three specific examples that halacha gives. One is, if the funeral, if the burial place has become damaged, or water damaged, or you're afraid that that damage will happen to the Kever, then you can move it. That's one. Number two, to move it to Kever Avot, this idea, right? If, let's say, for example, it happened all the time. Somebody died, they were in, you know, on the road. So they couldn't travel, there was no whatever. They would bury the person. They would wait until the body decomposed to its natural state, and then they would exhume the bones and move them to Kever Avot. And then the third reason is to move to Eretz Yisrael. Those are the only three known classical examples in halakha. But we digress. What?
Something with family?
Yeah, connected family plot. There is such a thing. There's such an idea, a very strong idea of a family plot. All right. Perush. Okay. I'm now on the top of the second column here on two. Second line. Perush. Says, Vayagasham, top line. Melamed shelo yarad avinu lishtakea ela lagursham. He did not go lishtakea to settle, but rather lagursham. Where is that from? Another quote from? Anybody recognize it? From the Haggadah Shal Pesach, Vayagar Sham. He dwelled there from Lagur, temporarily. Hirush melamed ledorot b'chol galut v'galut ha'anaga. He taught us for generations, forever. Sheyidun, they would know. Shelo yardu lehishtakeya, they did not go down to dwell permanently. Rak lagur ad boket hayamim, they're not there forever, just until the end of days. V'yihu mechashvim be'enei atzmam lo ke'ezrachim, they have to consider themselves not like natural citizens. This is not their homeland. V'chein tziva Yosef. Yosef also said, Pakod yifkod, you shall redeem me. V'chein kol ha'shvatim, shebezei nichu shoresh gadol b'levav Yisrael. They place this great root in Klal Yisrael. V'lachein, and therefore, v'yakutsu mipnei b'nei Yisrael. The Egyptians were repulsed by b'nei Yisrael. Why were they repulsed by b'nei Yisrael? Somebody said something very psychologically deep. They were repulsed by them. They were upset by the Jewish people because the Jews didn't consider themselves like Egyptians. They said, no, we're not Egyptians. We're just living here. The Egyptians said, who's living here? Look how many of you are. If they said, okay, we're Egyptians. We want to be a part of you. Let's marry in. Let's become part of you. And what's the problem?
The Egyptians first and Jews after.
What?
Like when they sell you American Jewish or Jewish American.
We'll talk about this in a second. Of course, this is it's like, remember, he wrote this when? 100, at least, he died in 1920, right? Probably wrote this sometime close to 100 years ago, a little more. And he was talking about the Jews of Europe. Right? What's chilling about what he's going to write is...
Pre-Holocaust.
What? Pre-Holocaust.
Pre-World War I.
Yeah, right.
No.
Well, we don't know when he wrote it exactly. It's unclear when he wrote it. Probably, he probably gave this drasha. I'm without a doubt sure that he wrote his perush after he gave this drasha. I'm sure he gave this speech. He wrote it up and he inserted it. He's like, where am I supposed to insert it in my perush? You know what I'm saying? And he wrote it up and he inserted his perush on Chumash. Shehiyu nechshevehem beinem kekotzim vayakutsu, they were like thorns. Shekemo hakotz eino nisbach. Right, thorns like brush. If you're planting a field, you don't want the thorny underbrush. And it damages the roots of the branches of the good plants. Kain hayu nechshavim Yisrael. So the Jewish people shelo dimu et atzmam lirnin mitzrim. They didn't consider themselves Egyptians. Vayu nifradim bitchunotehem ubeher gasham. They were just different. They acted different. Until the Egyptians looked at them like strange. And there's the rub, as we'll see. That's the trick. On the one hand, it's what they have to do in order to remain distinct and separate. But by remaining distinct and separate,
people hate them.
Okay? And he's skipping a ton of history now. The leaders of our nation learn from this. Uberosham Ezra v'anshei Knesset HaGdola. Okay, we're now skipping how many years? How many years from Egypt to Ezra v'anshei Knesset HaGdola? 1,000 years, more, whatever, right? We're going through 400 years, 200 years to get out of Mitzrayim, another 400 years to the Beit HaMikdash, and then another 400 years to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and another 100 years after that. Okay? What happened when Ezra said, hey y'all, let's go rebuild Eretz Yisrael? You all learned this in your Navi classes? Did you whatever? No? You don't know?
I don't have a Navi class.
Oh, you gotta learn to say forever. Critical. What happened when Ezra said, hey, let's go be, and he got permission from the UN of the time to go back and rebuild Eretz Yisrael?
Not everyone wanted to.
And some of them. One second, wait. Let's qualify not everyone. How many people went with him?
Very few.
20,000 or 40,000? I think 40,000. Okay, 40,000 out of? 40,000 out of? How many Babylonian Jews were there at the time? Quite literally, millions. 40,000 Jews. Okay? And Ezra realized, like, one second, the call, Shivat Zion, where's everybody? By the way, I like to say this. Whenever you have this opportunity to make Aliyah, to leave, two groups leave.
Those who have to.
One second. We'll call them the Miskenim. The people who have nothing better to lose, nothing to lose. Or and the ideologues. That's right. Those are the two groups. You have the Ra-ra, sis, boom-ba, right? You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't say us. We're like a level below because there's Netflix now and you can like make all your touch screen as your... You still have to be an Ivy League, right? But I look at like, the generation before us. My... What? What? Why isn't there Netflix for Netflix for South Africa? I don't understand. It's crazy. Yeah, South Africa. South America, I mean. Why isn't there Netflix for Netflix for them? Anyway. Okay. Those of us who came, but the people who came 20 years ago, you know the stories. 6 months in the Merkaz Klita, 6 months to get a telephone. Like, you know, that's real, like, real dedication. All right, whatever. Anyway.
When I turned out, we had people who could be waiting for
13
years.
13. When did you come?
All
right, you're lucky in that generation. We respect you.
Okay, this is the end. There was one phone in our building and one TV. We had the TV.
I like to tell that my uncle lived in Be'er Sheva. The guy next door to him got a phone. So they drilled a hole in the wall, and whenever the guy took phone calls for him, they would pass the phone through the wall, through the hole in the wall, so that he could talk in the phone.
They were not phones.
Yeah, can you believe it?
We had one phone in our building.
And still they survived. You know, unbelievable. But I will say this. We just spent last Shabbat in Beit El with his 5 children, and you know they invited us to come with them, their entire families, and their 50-some-odd grandchildren. You know what I'm saying? So they are now reaping the benefits of the sacrifices they made 20 and 30 years ago. You know, you can I know her. They should live and enjoy them for many, many more years. Yeah, that's the point. I think that's the idea. Shall live and be well. Okay, so that's what Ezra did. Ezra realized all the same problem. I mean, he's stuck in here. He's like, these people... It's like lip service, you know. Yeah, okay, Ezra, great. Go build up Israel. You know what we'll do? We'll help you. We will.
Fundraise.
Send you money. Exactly right. That's exactly what they did. Okay? How much to dedicate the Beis HaMikdash? We're there for you. And that's what they did. Okay? So what did Ezra do? Shegadru v'siyagu ha'uma b'yud chet davar. They created 18 decrees. Okay? 18 ways to separate. Think about how many of the rabbinic laws are instituted to separate between Jews and non-Jews. Can you think of a couple? Yeah. Like? Yain Achri, right? Bishul Akum, right? What's that? Pat Akum, right? There's a ton of them. There's 18 of them, right? And they're designed. Now, by the way, what do we do with all those halachot?
Get random.
How?
Yain
Bushal. Right! There's like... my uncle has a term for them. He calls them mitzvot miskenot. Right? There are these mitzvot, like, for example, we're talking like prisbol. Right? You know, there's a mitzvah not to lend money, not to keep your loans through Shemitah. No problem. We found a way around it. Like, there's all these mitzvot miskenot. What? Has a mechira? No. That's what we were talking about. You think about it, there's like a nice list of mitzvot miskenot. These poor mitzvot that, you know, okay, of course we keep them, but you know, we find ways around them. Okay, so these are nowadays. So he made these 18 decrees. Well, I can't eat with you. So what do? I have a caterer, a glatt kosher caterer, prepare me food on a separate plate so that I can sit on my, you know, it still creates a separation. Yeah, what?
At the White House.
Well, at the White House now. It's
the
even better.
Kitchen.
Yeah, they kosher the whole kitchen for the Hanukkah thing. No. Once a year for the... We'll get to it. How much time do I have? I think I want to drag this over 2 weeks because it's important enough. We'll see. No?
Keep going.
It's long. You'll see it's long, but it's so important. Okay. Why? V'lachen, Amru B'Yushalmi, that he's sending the Yushalmi, Afilu Eliyahu, Eino Yachol, number 3, I think. Eino Yachol Levatel. Eliyahu, Anabi, cannot negate these decrees. We can, but he can't, okay? Perush, Kol Zman Shelo Baha Goel, as long as the Redeemer has not come, V'yafasek Shibud Malchiyot, and end the subjugation of the Malchiyot, Afilu Baha Mevaser V'Amar, Kitekaf Yavo. Even if the proclaimer should come and say, it's almost over, Mashiach is coming. Lo yevatlu. These decrees cannot be annulled. Why? Shehem heim hadvarim hamekayimim la'uma begola. These are the things that cause the nation to continue in the exile. Umaskiri moto shehu Yisrael be'eretz lo. They remind us that we are Israel in a land that is not ours, that is not yours. Yes, I'm sorry, listen.
So instead of canceling them, we just find ways
around. Yeah. I mean, we don't cancel mitzvot.
Right.
Well, we can't
raise rent.
Exactly. Okay.
So we should have strange, you know, names. And
we should absolutely be. You know, it's interesting when our first child was married, was born, Simcha, we gave him an English name. We named him Simcha Alan Spalter because we wanted him to have a name, because Simcha is an impossible name to say. Simcha, Simcha, Sim whatever. Okay? So we gave him an English name. And I don't know, something switched in my mind. And then Bitzala was born. We named him Bitzalel Yosef. I think we called him Bitzala Joseph, you know, Yosef, whatever. And then Leah was Chaya Leah. I didn't even try Chaya Leah. Forget it. Chaya, Chaya. And then it's even worse. My fourth one is Chaim Petachia. Forget it. What?
Yatsmikalia.
Yeah, Yatsmikalia. You know what I'm saying? Chaim Petachia. You know, it's impossible. Because I said to myself, I think what happened was I said, if the President of the United States' name could be Barack Hussein Obama, my children's name, my son's name could be Chaim Petachia Spalter. It doesn't have to be Frank John Spalter. It doesn't have to be. You know what I'm saying? This idea of names. But every time you go to the doctor, every time it's again, Chaim, pet, whatever, come, Spalter, come. You know what I'm saying? Every single time you go to an office, you're confronting that. You know? If you want that. I was just reading an article about in the Mosash magazine about women, girls, who were named 30 years ago for Yamit. You know, because Yamit was given back 30 years ago. So there was one woman, her name, she actually, her family moved to the United States from Minnesota. And they couldn't even say Yamit. So I would ask her, what's Yamit? Where does that name from? Because it's a unique name. And she didn't want to get into the politics. So she said it means, like, you know, waters, rivers or something. Which it does, it means Yamit. But, you know, like, that's the idea of having that name. But how many people give their children, even Orthodox people, a Jewish name, a very Jewish name, and they stick with it? Well, is that right? Well, you know, it's important. It's critically important to know. But Eretz Lo Lo. All that means is every time you go to get a driver's license, every time you go to the doctor, every time you go to the dentist, you are reminded your name is not a name that everybody knows. So some people will say, that's good. I would say that's good. Other people would say it's hard. Every single time, you know, like, I got to spell my email address, you know, like, no, C-H. No, C-H. You know, that's what it is. Vide! Me'et hayot Yisrael bagoyim, from the time of the Jewish people and the nations, berabot hashanim, through the many years, asher lo ha'aminu kol yeshvei tevel, ki kainmu ba'ofen nifla. Nobody could have believed that they would still exist in this miraculous manner. Asher lo yishaer machshavot adam maskil. It's impossible to measure for the intelligent person. There actually is a book about this. You ever read the book Permission to Believe? Rabbi Kellerman or whatever his name is, Permission to Believe? So one of his proofs that he offers that the Jewish people are a unique, spirit, special nation, is the fact that we're still around. He said, because historically, it's if you would do the numbers, he does the math. Yeah, it's not against the odds. It's statistically impossible that we should continue to exist.
Who wrote that whole thing?
I have it. Permission to Believe. Look it up. It's a very...
No, it was a famous guy who wrote all about this. How it's a miracle.
Yeah, this guy. What's his name? I don't remember. Look up the word, the book, Permission to Believe. It's a very short book.
Kellerman.
It's worthwhile. Kellerman? Kellerman, right. Kellerman. It's worthwhile to read. Hayodea korot hayamim, someone who knows what happened to us. Bahamitsulot, he goes back to his water imagery. The mitsulot, the pits. Asher shatfu ba'alfei shanim, that washed over through the thousands of years. Al am hama'at v'arafa koach, this weak nation. V'chadal onim, this poor, sad nation. I'm in the parentheses. Asher zeh levad gam kein mofet nifla v'gadol. This is a great wonder. Al kiyum ha'uma, about the existence of the nation, the matara and iskava elokit, for our great exalted goal, asher nitnavu alav karmonim, that the karmonim, the early ones, prophesied about. You see where I am? The end of parentheses and number 3. Hine, derech hashkacha, it is the way of hashkacha, ki yanuchu meshech shanim karov lamea omataim. So what happens, he's going to now tell you, I'm going to tell you the process of the Jews in exile. So here's how it goes. They get to a place in exile, and they're at peace for like 100 or 200 years. V'achar zeh, yakum ruach se'ara. After which, a terrible wind will arise. V'yifot hamon galav, it will spread its great waves. V'chala, yivale yaharos, yishtof lo yachmon. A destruction will yivale,
swallow,
destroy, wash away, not be compassionate. Ad ki nifzarim bedudim, until they are spread alone. Yarotsu, Yivruchu leMakom Rachok. They'll run. They'll flee to a separate, far away place. V'sham Yitachdu, and there they will unite. Yihyu leGoy Yugdal Taratan. They will become a nation. They will become great. So he says, this is how it happens every 100-200 years, right? They're in a place. They grow strong. They grow powerful. They grow wise. They grow influential. And then along comes some wind, some terrible force, knocks them down, destroys them, annihilates them, spreads them to some other place where they start all over again. Happens all the time. So what happens in this place? Chachmatam ya'asu chayil. Their wisdom becomes strong. Ad ki yishkach hayoto ger be'eretz nachriya. Until they forget that they're a stranger in a strange land. Yachshov ki ze makom machatzavto. They think this is their place. This is their home place. Ba'al yitzapeh liyishuat Hashem aruchaniyut bizman hamiyuad. They stop expecting the salvation of God that's expected. Why? Why should we expect God to save us? Save us from what? Here we are. Here we are. Sham yavo ruach sa'ara od yoter chazak. And then along comes another terrible destructive wind, even greater. Yaskir otam bekol so'en berash. And reminds them in a loud, I don't know what so'en means, wailing, terrible voice. Yehudi ata. Umisam chalish, you are a Jew. Who made you into a person? Lech lecha al eretz asher lo yadata. Go to a place that you don't know. Kacha yachlif matzav ha-yisraeli v'kiyumo bayamim. This is the Jewish condition. This is our existence throughout all days. Kasher ayina maskil yir'eh b'sefer divrei hayamim. This is like, it's just true. Like he says, this is the annals of Jewish history. It repeats itself over and over again.
So the worse dissimulation is, the more extensive dissimulation is.
Every time he says, it's like waves. You go to a place.
But it means that the worse the extremism is going
to end up. Every time it's worse. So he says, they go to a place, they get strong, they get powerful, they get relatively influential. They're happy. What?
It's
hard to imagine, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's always hard to imagine. That's exactly the point. Okay. Kasher ayin amaskil yir ebedev remim. Zelish te'a sibut. Sibut. This is for two reasons. I'm going to stop a second comment. One, the kiyum hadata amiti v'taharato. Right? In order to maintain the kiyum hadat, the existence of the dat, of the religion. Or the kiyum ha'uma, the existence of the nation. When the Jewish people are left alone, Yafriach v'yigdal Torato upilpulo, he grows, he flowers. His Torah, his teaching becomes strong. Ubanav ya'asu chayil, and his children grow strong. Yitgadru neged avotam, but then they rebel against their parents. He says something very interesting. He says in every generation, so the first generation gets there, they grow strong, they grow wise. The second generation they raise, and what do? They rebel against their parents. Why? Ki kacha chateit ha'adam, asher acharon yichadesh yosif ometz mashayan ne'elam midor ha'yashan. Very deep, very powerful, very beautiful psychological insight. He says the next generation, they want to add something. They want to contribute something new. V'zeh b'chochmat ha'anoshut. This is human wisdom. It's inherent in the human condition. Right? The more intelligent, the later generations come, they want to add something, they want to contribute something. That we have a problem. But you can't do that with Judaism, given from the heavens. Right, it's not hewn here in the world, rather it's given divinely. Is this a problem? Why? Because the new generation comes, they want to contribute something. They want to say, we want to do something new. We want to do something special. We want to have our own mark on the world. Comes along Judaism and says, you can't. He says, when he's very interesting, he says, hello, im haya be'eretz Yisrael min lifnim. If we were living as a nation in Eretz Yisrael, hello, haya lehem litgader b'tikun ha'uma, he says there's a difference, a fundamental difference between Jewish people living in Eretz Israel and Jews in exile. For Jews in exile, Judaism is static. It's unit. It cannot be changed. He said, but if the Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael, you have the Sanhedrin. What can the Sanhedrin do? They can legislate change. They can say, that which our fathers did, you can do that. That's what the Sanhedrin's job was. Their job was to reinterpret the Torah for the generation of its time. Their job was to say, that which we did before, that was good. The Chachamim made a gzeirah, but they have the power to say, that gzeirah is no longer applicable. We have to make new gzeirot.
Why do we
not
You say that mitzvah miskenot.
What's that? Mitzvah miskenot. Beit din hagadol ayah lechol levatel beit din hakodem. Right? The Beit din hagadol could and would say, that was great, we have to change, yeah.
But don't they have to be on a higher level?
A Beit din has to be on a higher level of chachma. You're right, but the Beit din hagadol, Sanhedrin could do it. That was their job. That could do it. They should do it. The job of Sanhedrin is to sit down and say, what's not working? Right, this gzeirah is not relevant to us. Remember, I talked about this once. You know, there are examples. Medicine on Shabbat. Yeah. Right? Nobody grinds their own medicine anymore. So maybe we have to change that one. But there are other problems of Shabbat today that halacha isn't addressing. The ofi of Shabbat and resting on Shabbat. Let's be brutally honest. I mean, I might get put in chayim for this. Maybe I'm going to be lucky. Right? Orthodoxy is great and it's contained and maintained up. But there are aspects of Orthodoxy that don't address modern life. And anybody honest will say that, will understand that. So we're locked in for very good and important reasons, but we're locked in. It's a problem. And we have to be aware of that problem. Yeah, you want to say something?
Why do we not have a Sanhedrin today?
What's that?
Why do we not have a Sanhedrin?
Because we don't have a Ben Amigdash. Why don't we have a Ben Amigdash?
No. I didn't know you had to have the Ben Amigdash.
You don't necessarily have to have a Ben Amigdash. You have to have smicha, which means pretty much all the Rabbanim in the world have to get together and agree. Not smicha, not fake smicha like I have. Real smicha. So in order to do that, it can be done. But pretty much all the rabbis in the world have to get together and agree to give smicha to a specific person, to reestablish smicha. And then that person can give smicha onward and onward. Here's the trick. What's the trick?
Take the ego out of it and pick one person.
Go get all the rabbis in the world to agree on one person.
That's why.
There's a very famous story in the early 1900s that wanted to be Mechadesh the smicha in Tzfat. To give some great gadol smicha, and how it failed, and then if you're interested, you can do research on it. There's about the desire, about the attempt to reestablish smicha, and that's the reason. What's the reason why we don't have it? Because we can't get along. Welcome to the world. Welcome to the Jewish world. Oi, okay. Here we go. So Beit Din, Umash Nidrash Yugimel Mido. That was derived through the 13 attributes. Beit Din could reinterpret and reestablish in the way that was meaningful for them. So the Gemara about, and we'll go into it, there's a Gemara about the fact that each generation had to give an example of what the Shi'urim were. By the way, this example that even today, how much matzah do you have to eat on Pesach? I guarantee you eat more than your great-grandparents ate. Guarantee. We don't know. So each generation has to reevaluate what the proper Shi'urim are. Every generation they would establish the chachamim of that generation. What is the proper shi'ur? There was always this revelation of God. Aside from the Mikdash HaRishon, they were prophets, the sons of prophets. I'm now on the next page. Even by Mikdash Hasheni, the second Bein Hamikdash, Amru Shesham Shoavim Ruach Hakodesh. They said there was Ruach Hakodesh. V'haya Galoy Or Eloki Tamid Chofep. The revelation. There was Giloy Shechina. There was God. Asher Lo Yadu Ador Lifnim U'mihahanagash El Uma Be'Enehem Hazmaniim. The leadership of that generation at that time. As they saw appropriate to teach at that time, whatever was necessary. But in the exile, lo kein begola. Not true here. Right, what happens the second generation in limud Torah? There's nothing to contribute. Nobody can add anything, and that's true. Rambam. V'hakdamato l'sefer Mishnah Torah. Ve'ein shum choze v'navi. There's no prophet. There's no visionary. U'michitza shel bazel maseket ben Yisrael la'avihem shebashamayim. In the exile, whatever you want to say, it's a very famous idea. There's a michitza shel bazel. There's this iron gate, this iron partition between us and God. That, by the way, does not exist in Eretz Yisrael. Just want to point out. Kachi shalcha shel ha'uma. So this is what happens to the nation. Shekasher yikansu le'eretz nachriya. When they enter into a land not theirs, you enam b'nei Torah. They're not b'nei Torah. The people, the first immigrants of any generation, they're not b'nei Torah. They're running. Right? And what do they do, that first generation? What do they want their children to do? To some degree, but they also, parts of them, they want them to reestablish themselves. So there's this awakening of the spiritual desire that yearns for them to go back to spirituality. Yilmedu, they learn. Yerbitzu Torah, yasu niflaot, they do great things. Until they build yeshivas. They do. This is what happens every time. Hello, ein biyad hador lehosif ma litkater neged avotam. But then the next generation, there's nothing for them to add. So this person who wants to add something, wants to contribute, wants to have some contribution. No, Rabbi, look at it this way. We don't look at it that way. So what's he going to do? If you tell me I have nothing to add, so what am I going to do? I'm going to, what?
Go in a different direction.
I will consider ra'ayonot kozvot. Right? Rebellious ideologies. Yesha'er chadashot bishkoach mahayalu umato. He will evaluate new things to the nation. Bidudo b'yamat lod. V'yema, what will happen? Od ma'ad yashuv lamar sheker nachlu avotav. And pretty soon they're going to say, our forefathers were liars. Ba'yisraeli b'chlal yishkach machatzavto. And the Israelite will forget where he was yun. V'yechashev le'ezrach ra'anan. He will consider himself a citizen, a good, dedicated, devoted citizen of the country in which he lives. Ya'azov limudei dato. He will abandon the study of his religion. Lilmod deshonot lolo. He'll want to learn languages that are not his. Yalif mikilkata v'lo yalif mitakana. This is a borrowed language from the Gerushalmi. He'll learn things that are destructive and not positive. Yachshov ki Berlin hi Yerushalayim. He will think that Berlin is Jerusalem. Or Queens. You will do that which is destructive and not that which is productive. Says the Hoshea, V'az Yismach Yisrael El Gil Ha'amim, Az Yavo Ruach Sa'ara So'ev Yisar. And then what happens? What's the next step? Every single time comes a terrible wind. Ya'akor Oto Mi Gizo. He will uproot him from his geza, from his root. He will teach him, send him to a place where he doesn't know the language. He will learn he was a stranger. His language is the language of our holiness. What's his real language? He'll have to again change his clothes. What's the only difference? History has gone over and over and over again. So he's getting scared. There's only one significant difference between this time and every other time. Right. There is a place where Jews are supposed to know that this is their language and this is their land. There is that place. But he continues, obviously you understand, you get the point. It's worth reading and he says, this is the idea of Loga Altim Veloma Astim. You have a choice. He says it happens over and over again. We've seen this history repeat itself. 100 years, 200 years, he says, exactly what happens. This is exactly what happens. So I just have to, as an epilogue, so I told you, Rabbi Moshe Holstein calls me at 8:10, he says, I need you to, my replacement backed out of me at the last minute, can you give a shiur for me? I said, sure, when? He said, oh, right now. I said, okay, where? In Chafetz Chaim. Okay, so I ran over to Chafetz Chaim. Can't say no to Rabbi Moshe, he's an amazing man. Ran over to Chafetz Chaim, a couple people were still there, and I spoke about this Meshech Chachma. As I'm walking into Chafetz Chaim, you know, it's right near the Beit HaArecha, and I hear English. I hear people talking English, young people. And as I'm walking out, and I see this group of 50 young people speaking English. And it turns out there's a birthright group that happens to be staying in Chafetz Chaim right then, right there.
Wow.
You know? From University of Florida and University of Texas. And you look at these faces, and they just looked at their faces, these young Jewish faces. And first, it's like I'm hanging around, and the tour guide looks at me and goes, "Why? What are you doing here?" And I saw them in Hebrew. I said, "Oh, I'm just interested." So they're waiting for two of their group to show up, and they say, "Well, while we're waiting, would you mind saying a few words, telling us about this place?" What? So I said, "Ken, betach, in baya." I said, "What's your name?" I said, "Shmi Reuven." And one of the young men, looks at me and goes, "That's my name too. I'm Reuven." I said, "Na'im me'od," and I said, "Hayiti be'emet rotzeh ledaber etchem be'ivrit, but I'd like to speak in English because I'm from America." And they all laughed, very nice, okay, very good, and I started talking to them. It's really hard, and I spoke a little bit about the place, and it's really agriculture. And I said, you know, my family and I, we moved here a few years ago because, as you all know, like, we're all pulled in many different directions about who we are and what our identity is. We're Jewish, we're American, we're Jewish. And this idea of identity, really, we struggle with it. Said, and we really wanted just to give our children a strong sense of what it means to be a Jew living in the world today, and the best way to do that was to live here. And I said, I hope as you go through this trip, you'll struggle with this question of what does it mean to be a Jew living in America today? And how is my Jewish identity going to manifest itself? Being active in Israel, being involved, what else are you going to tell them? You know what I'm saying? It's like in 2 minutes, how do you say to a group of kids who obviously care enough to want to take the trip, but it's questionable how much more than that they care? It's a free trip.
It's a free trip, but
that's
not
right.
Much.
How much more? It's impossible to know. It's impossible to know. And it was like so jarring to read the Meshech Chachma, and then to walk out. This is what we learn. Mm-hmm. And then to walk out, and you're in Chafetz Chaim, in Eretz Yisrael, in a yeshuv established literally by the Jews of the Gola. I said, you guys probably did that. You went to the Gola, and that's for money for people to build the shul. And the guy, like, is the old timers. They're like, "Yeah, for this building, we did exactly that. We went and we raised money for the shul." And to go out and to see what's left, literally what's left of the vast majority of American Jewry, the ones who care enough to take the trip, and to see the words of the Meshech Chachma come true before our eyes, literally, and to not know their future, to wonder about their future, and at the same time, hope that somehow the existence of Israel will call them back before the chilling words of the Meshech Chachma come true yet again. Stop.